and it got me so down. But I picked myself back up and I started telling me, no, my God's not done making me a masterpiece. He's still working on me.
Welcome everyone to another edition of Grief Chat with your host, Donna Mathewitz, and we are in studio today, and we're going to continue a conversation that we started a while ago on a great book that Donna has used in her healing and grieving work, and we're always so happy when you stop in. Donna, how have you been?
I've been good. I've been really good. Today, as we record this, it's like, wow, it is a stellar day out there. Nice weekend, actually. We've had a lot of nice days.
Does that help with people's moods?
I think so. Yes.
I hope so.
Yes, I hope they are. I always tell people, get out, take your walk, you know, get out and look at the colors, you know, take a drive, do something that makes your heart feel better.
So, Donna, we started a while ago a series on this great book that you have, and it has an unusual name for a grief book. It's called Navigating Grief with Humor. But boy, is it insightful. And tell me why this book resonated with you initially.
Well, yeah, it's very rich. It's written by Melissa Mork, who's a local woman from the Minneapolis area. I guess someone recommended me. They asked, in fact, she has taught a course at Northwestern University in Roseville on this very topic, navigating grief with humor. And it just kind of, grief, humor, people might think it's kind of an oxymoron, you know, that it's like, But just like humor can go with grief, like faith can go with grief and joy can go with grief. And, you know, there are many things that might seem kind of opposite of each other that still can really walk alongside each other through different things in our life.
Is humor the opposite of grief, or what do you
think is the opposite of grief? I don't think it's the opposite of grief, because I think it gets people through some crazy times. And it depends on, you know, the person. Some people just have a really great sense of humor and are always the one who want to make other people laugh, and, you know, and so it's really hard for them to back off that sometimes. Even in grief, they might be the ones who might cause a group of people to kind of burst out in laughter, who are the ones maybe willing to share the funny stories about the person who's gone, or, you know, because we know we feel better. You know, it changes our endorphins. Things change in our chemistry when we laugh. And so, you know, even the Bible says laughter is good medicine, right? It's good for the soul. So I think there is a place for humor, done well, of course, not inappropriately, but done with some keeping people's feelings in mind and not to offend, or not to make sure we're still validating the pain and yet having some time to laugh as well. I mean, we do in our grief group, our Gone Too Soon group and our grief care group, we do laugh. We sometimes, I think as we're laughing about something, I think if somebody walks past the hall and sees the sign that says, please be quiet, grief group in session, that they might go, wow, that's a, you know, I mean, because people assume that all you do is get together and cry. It's like, well, we do some of that. We always have Kleenex available, but we laugh sometimes.
Just like
too.
We do on Grief Chat, we
that's
laugh
right.
a lot.
We do laugh a lot.
Donna, do you remember the first time that you laughed after Tim passed away?
I do, very distinctly. My youngest nephew, Dylan, had turned 2 years old just 6 days after Tim died. Dylan turned two. And we went over to their house for a little party. I don't think it was right away. I think everybody said, let's just wait a little while and get together. So we did. But whenever that was, I remember standing at the top of their stairs, and I'm thinking of something Dylan said or did, because, you know, at two, they're pretty darling with their antics. And I remember laughing, and right at the same time, I thought in my head, oh my gosh, that was my laugh that I heard. That was me laughing, because this whole experience had been like an out-of-body experience anyway.
Losing a son at a young age.
Yeah, yes, yeah. Right. So it was just, everything was like I was watching from above, like I was floating over myself, watching myself do all the things I had been doing since that day, you know, in 1992. So, yeah.
But you do remember the...
I do remember.
So laughter is an important part of this grieving piece.
It is. So in this book, Melissa included a chapter on all the different types of grief. And there are many. I counted this morning as I was looking over the one we're going to talk about now, that there's, with this one, there are 9 of them yet that we haven't talked about.
Wow.
So I think it's just a great education for people.
Yes.
And I think this one will cause people maybe to pause and maybe be more willing to come alongside someone who is working through this kind of grief. So it's ambiguous grief. The word ambiguous means unclear, vague, obscure, not clearly understandable. That's what ambiguous means. So the different things that can occur in life that can cause it to be are divorce, dementia, mental illness, job loss, foreclosure, the death of a dream. Those all can lead to ambiguous grief. I added another one, brain injuries. So what it means initially at the bottom of it is that it's like, so let's say divorce. It's like there is grief in divorce, but the person didn't die. He or she is just living across town in an apartment now. And I think of it especially with children who suffer from this. I think ambiguous grief is pretty big for kids. And I think it's something we don't recognize enough.
No, and I think last month you did a story or you did an interview, and the focus was grieving as a child.
Yeah.
And what really resonated with me was when you said kids come back to school after the long summer, and it's like, hey, how was your summer? Yeah. Maybe their dog died. Maybe grandma died. Maybe their parents got divorced.
Yes.
Maybe, you know, mom got cancer.
Right.
I mean, so grief for kids a lot of times it's hard for them to articulate, right?
Well, I think we want to, and sometimes it's just so that we don't have to work so hard at helping them. We want to say kids are resilient. We use that term. Kids are resilient. They'll bounce back. It's like, well, you know, is that entirely true?
I don't know. You would know.
It depends on what you're talking about. But when it comes to some of these things, like mom has cancer, mom and dad are getting divorced, that can go on. That can affect them the rest of their lives. We're right now praying fervently for a mom friend of ours who was here in this area, moved to, I think they're out in South Carolina now, but she's a mother of 10, and she just dropped over 2 months ago, and they found a brain tumor, cancerous brain tumor.
What?
She's been in the hospital, had multiple surgeries. We have now 10 children, you know, that it could be that they will be without a mom.
What's her name? We will pray for her.
Lynette.
Thank you.
Yes, pray for Lynette and her husband, Sean, and all those children.
So ambiguous grief.
Yes.
You know, I some of those things that you're talking about are things that I don't think people give enough credit to if you're suffering from something like that.
No, like she said in her book, she said, you know, no one sends a card or brings over the casseroles for these types of things, right? You know, it's just, it's kind of like nobody wants to talk about it. We won't talk. You know, another thing I thought about was 9/11. Do you remember? Of course we do remember 9/11, when all these families started making posters of their loved ones before social media. They were plastering. Now, theirs was ambiguous. They, with everything in them, wanted to believe that their loved ones would be found alive.
Right.
Right.
Missing.
Yeah, the missing posters. Have you seen? You know, that's ambiguous grief. The missing children. Think about years ago when someone came with the idea to put their pictures on milk cartons, right? Those parents, parts of them never, ever gave up that their child would be found, even if it was 20 years later, that they'd still see their children again. That's ambiguous grief. There's no funeral. There's no, you know what I mean? There's, for all these things, there's no, and I don't like the word closure in grief because it's kind of, it doesn't work that way. But on the other hand, if a child is missing and they're found, returned
home,
there's some closure there because they're back. Missing in action, soldiers who aren't, you know, who go down on a plane somewhere in Afghanistan. And again, hope upon hope, it's like, I have no proof he's gone. So I now have ambiguous grief.
What are some of the others again? Tell me, remind me what.
Dementia, of course. You think about Alzheimer's. There you know, you lose the person you loved almost a day at a time.
But yet they're still here.
And they're still here.
So how do you grieve that?
Yeah. It is a grief process. And I think that's a topic, I think, that more people are willing to talk about. I don't know, something about, you know, because so many of us have been affected with family members that, you know, have succumbed to that nasty disease. And so it's not hard to have a chat about with somebody else whose mother now has Alzheimer's, or you can talk about that over coffee and compare notes, and there's no fixing it. But at least those people can find support, I think, easier than some other things. Divorce, divorce, dementia, mental illness. That's a big one, because that is so, there's so many gray areas in all that. A job loss.
You know, I think sometimes with a job loss and also with divorce, you don't know what to say, so you say nothing.
Yes, that's right.
And I think you almost pretend it's not happening, but yet that's not healthy for the person that is grieving.
That's right. I have a dear friend from church, Chris. She had worked at Baker Square for, I don't know, 20-some years. I mean, and she loved it. I mean, she was a server, and she loved her job. Had her favorite customers and all that. And when COVID hit, she lost her job. And then Baker Square was no more.
Right.
And that was a huge part of what she grieved during the pandemic.
It was her identity.
It was. She loved her job. And, like, now what am I going to do? She's, you know, just a little younger than me. So it's like, well, what do I do now? You know, and now she has a job. She doesn't love it, but she's got a job. So, but that was one of the huge losses for her.
Did she find that people did not know what to say to her, or they didn't understand her grief?
I think there was so much loss for all of us
during
that.
COVID,
that
sure.
was like, yeah, you and, you know, 100 other people. I think it all just kind of got put into the same pot. On Sunday, I was able to, it was kind of cool. My pastor and I, Pastor Jim and I, we, during our message portion at the Harbor, we did interview style, and him and I chatted about grief, loss, resiliency, and, you know, we asked the audience what, because we have to think about what we all lost during the pandemic, and so we just asked the people sitting in church, you know, what did you lose? And people just kind of shouted out different things. You know, I lost trust. I lost my job. I lost security. You know, I lost a loved one. I lost relationships. We still have, unfortunately, I think, a lot of fractured family units over between COVID and politics. We have families that will not get together for Thanksgiving because they can't be in the same room together, which is devastating. I mean, that's terrible that is happening, but it is. It's a reality. What are they going to do with that? Well, I don't know. It takes two to tango, right? It takes two to heal the wounds too, and so it's sad. But it's things like that. That the death of a dream is another one. I often think of infertility sometimes with that. Couple gets married and they're just excited, they're gonna have a baby, and then
people ask, are you
when are you gonna have a baby? Yeah, not knowing they've been trying for the last 2.5 years, right? Yeah. So the expectation that is just normal and everybody gets to do it, I think, you know, if we just stop and think that, it's like, no, it's not.
It's a miracle.
Not everybody gets to experience
right.
that. So yeah, and some people work very hard and spend a lot of money to finally be able to have their own child. But
so the death of a dream, I mean, I think that's something that you might not even know somebody is grieving.
Right. Yeah, if they haven't shared it a lot. But it could just affect how they go through life.
Of course it does.
They're just sad about it, and they probably don't tell more than one or two people that maybe knew about this venture they were going to go on. And for whatever reason, and I think sometimes as we age, it becomes evident, like, I'm at this age now. It's too late. I have to learn to let go of this, because it's not going to happen now. It should have happened when I was 30. Now I'm 65. It's not going to happen.
So do you grieve these things that you just were bringing up in ambiguous grief? Do you grieve them in a different way than if you actually lost a loved one? Are you still going through different stages?
Well,
what's the same and what's different?
I think what's the same is the feelings, but I think it's very difficult for you to really reach out for help, because even the person grieving any of the things we just talked about will think that it's lesser than, well, at least my child didn't die, or at least my husband didn't drop over of a heart attack, or, you know, that even the person suffering with the ambiguous grief is going to rationalize it and say it's not that big a deal, but maybe it is.
To them it is.
To them it is, but they feel like they maybe can't share it because someone might. And the trouble is, sometimes if you did share that with not the right person,
it would be poo-pooed.
It would be poo-pooed, like, well, at least, and even people who are grieving the loss of something as serious as a child, some of the responses that people have heard is like, well, at least you still have two other children. And I just heard someone in our group last week.
I'm sorry, but...
yeah, I mean... What? Yeah. Someone in the group just said, to that, she did respond to someone who said that rather in a dismissive way for her grief. And she said, tell me which one of your kids you'd give up then, if it's just... yeah, you still have two more. Which one of your three would you let go of? You know, people are just, it's like engaging mouth before brain kind of thing.
Right, yeah. And as you're grieving, you've told me before that a grieving person has to be forgiving of people around them on top of your grief, mm-hmm. because people sometimes do continue to say things that nobody says things to hurt you, I would assume.
Yeah.
It's just,
I always tell people, assume good intent.
Okay.
Whatever they say or don't say or however they fall short of your expectations.
Mm-hmm. Offer grace.
Offer grace, yeah. My little mantra that I made up years ago was, you know, walk through your grief, not around it or over it. Give grace to yourself and grace to others who don't understand, and be open to growth. You're changing. Your new normal will evolve, and you will be okay.
So what advice do you have for people that are going through ambiguous grief?
Well, I think you find a person who you can talk to. And maybe it's someone has a similar scenario.
Else.
Yeah, somebody else has lost their job or, you know, and you know, maybe you find a way to support each other through that. Even if it means just sharing the story and helping each other decide what do we do now, you know, kind of going from the why question to the what now. I think that's always a nice step from asking why this happened, because we don't often get answers to the why questions in life, not this side of heaven anyway. So just to be willing to talk it through and finding people to talk to. And maybe if it means professional help, then do that. Then go see a therapist, go see a counselor who can help you, just kind of a third person who can step back objectively and look at the whole picture with you and help you sort it out.
And I think this is a great interview and a great show that you did today to really remind people that grief comes in many different sizes and shapes.
It does, yes. She writes here in this paragraph, ambiguous grief often lingers in the person's life because there is rarely a resolution to it. While closure is not really a goal in normal grief, closure seems awfully appealing to the person who is experiencing ambiguous grief. They want a closing to it.
But some of these things don't have closure.
That's right. Doesn't, but they want it. That's what they're hoping for. And yeah, in some of these things we talked about, in most of them, there's really not an end. There is learning to cope and learning to accept.
Is that where resiliency comes in?
And to be resilient and find that ability to bounce back. And so, okay, that didn't work. This is her harm. This hurts me, but fill in the blank.
Donna, great information. Thank you so much. Donna Mathewitz, she's the host of Grief Chat, which is heard on AM 1460 and FM 97.7 KDWA in Hastings. Got me so